Books with Aaron, Polly, and Wayne, and maybe, you don't know, possibly Andrew at some point later in the show. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne. And this is maybe Andrew, some point later in the show.
I mean, spot on impersonation of Andrew. I mean, that is.
What do you mean, wow. It was Andrew?
Is that some AI bot performing as Andrew?
Is it ChatGPT?
It's our digital Andrew alternative.
You know, I feel like this is becoming a trend. I feel like Andrew's becoming unreliable.
Wildly unreliable.
I mean, we're coming mid-year performance appraisals. We might have to have a conversation with him. As soon as we switch to Discord, Andrew started shitting the bed.
A sternly worded conversation. I like it. With consequences, Paul.
You know, it all started when Comixology changed his app, and he ended up going back to physical books.
Oh, that's true.
Paper. Unreliable.
Paper has infected his brain.
Maybe we'll get him back since the two of the creators of Comixology are launching their own digital platform.
Yeah, that's not going to last. I mean,
no.
How many digital comic retailers have launched since Comixology and none of them really have stuck around?
Yeah, I want to go up against Amazon.
Yep,
that seems like a recipe for success.
One key is who do you get on board to do day in, day out? They do have the major distributors, but they don't have everyone. And they don't have the catalog that people already have invested in. That's their biggest problem. When you've got tens of thousands of comics already digitally out there, people don't want to switch, even if their experience sucks.
Yeah. Well, we were worried that Andrew was buried under the weight of all his physical comic books. But he's dug his way out.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Nice of you to join us.
Thank you. Thank you. I just got here.
Uh-huh. That's okay. We're going to talk about this in your performance appraisal, Andrew. Mid-year's coming up any week now. Yeah. We'll be discussing this.
I'm not looking forward to that discussion.
You might want to have your union rep with you. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I'm going to wear padded shorts just in case. I feel like the cricket bat's going to come out for this one. Yeah.
Well, so, guys. Paul, you recently moved.
Yes.
As you know, I moved back in the fall. You moved in the late winter, early spring. Mm-hmm. I have to ask, have you done what I have, feared that I'm going to? I haven't done it yet, but I've come very close. Have you accidentally sent an order to your old residence?
Yes, motherfucker. Let me tell you how many emails. And, you know, here's the thing. Like, when I have to type my new address in, that's not the problem. But when you use Shop Pay or Apple Pay or PayPal, and that shit just happens to be in your... Right. Yeah.
And the thing that I find frustrating, it's much like my computer, because, again, this morning, Skype came up, despite the fact that I have deleted and uninstalled the damn thing. It's out of my start menu. It's gone from everywhere, but yet it still comes up in the morning when I boot up my computer. I don't understand that. But similarly, with all my different digital payment apps, my old residence still shows up from time to time, and I'll get ready to hit purchase, and I'll glance up and see that it's going to my old address. I'm like, I mean, it's a shock, you know.
I had that happen in PayPal. It's like, I've been in this house for well over 10 years, and a couple years ago I did that. And I also have, like, I will buy things for my mom and have it be delivered directly to her.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that address will pop up.
Yeah.
You know what the worst thing is when you're applying for like a line of credit or something like that, and I haven't done this in a while, but like, or purchasing a house, purchasing a car, whatever, right? And they go through those credit check questions and like, have you ever lived at this address? And it may have been some like apartment you lived at when you were 19 for 6 months. And I'm like, I don't know. Did I?
Yeah.
Like, maybe. Like, I don't know every address I've lived at in my 46 years of life. You know?
You don't? Hilarious.
No. I mean, I went through when in my younger years, I pretty much moved, after I turned 18, I pretty much moved every year.
At the end of each lease agreement?
Yeah.
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 Because roommates, no roommates, girlfriend, no girlfriend,
boyfriend,
wife, no wife. you know, things like that. I moved a lot, Wayne.
I guess it's very different for me because, like, I lived in the same house growing up because my parents had that house for 52 years. Then from there, I only had two apartments before I moved into my own house. So I don't have that many addresses to remember.
No, I had quite a few. I mean, I couldn't even tell you. I couldn't even tell you the addresses that I've lived at. That makes it sound bad. It's not like I've lived in like 30 places. But even 10 is kind of hard to remember when you get older.
Well, you're a rambling man, Paul.
I was born a rambling man.
That's right. That's right.
I lived in eight different addresses, of which I can remember maybe half of them off the top of my head.
See? It's a thing.
Yeah, maybe it's just easier for me because I can count on one hand. I've lived.
Once you go beyond one hand and over 40, you don't really remember stuff.
Does that just only apply to addresses or to other parts of your life as well, Paul?
Oh, pretty much other parts of my life as well. Yeah, gotcha. Pretty much every part of my life, yeah.
More than five?
I don't know. Oh, maybe. Like, there's a reason we're only talking about four comic books this week.
That's right, because math is hard. And they're all books that Paul read. You noticed that was the criteria on what we were talking about today. We're going to talk about the books that Paul read.
You know, that was coincidence, not coincidence.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But before we talk about this week's comic books, there's been quite a bit of movie and TV news since the last time we spoke. Including the fact that there will be a new animated Mr. Miracle TV series on, I believe, HBO Max, now that it's back to HBO Max, and I never stopped calling it that to begin with, based on the Tom King run. You know, that award-winning Tom King Mr. Miracle book, they're doing a movie based on it. Or, excuse me, a TV show based on it.
I think that's awesome. I can't imagine how they're going to make that friendly for a wider viewing audience. You know what I mean?
I also don't quite understand how that Tom King run works so well because of the history of that character.
Right.
And if that's the introduction to that character, I don't know that story works.
That's my thing is, I mean, I think to enjoy that book, you really have to have been pretty well versed in DC history. And the background of that character and his supporting cast. And I'm like, I don't know how you make that new viewer friendly. I really don't. I'm going to assume they know what they're doing.
I wouldn't make that assumption, really.
I'm going to make that assumption that they know what they're doing. Because, so, I've been happy. I loved Creature Commandos.
I have yet to see Creature Commandos.
It is really good. It is really good. Yeah, you know, I enjoyed it.
I was thinking about it this morning and wondering if I could buy it off of like Amazon or something.
Probably. I would imagine that it is available for season purchase.
Are you anti HBO Max? I know you're anti Apple TV.
No, I will be getting HBO again when Peacemaker comes back.
Ah, okay.
Yeah,
and that's when August. Peacemaker,
yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah, I just don't have it right now.
Yeah,
can't wait for season two of Peacemaker.
Well, we've got a lot of DC, you know, DC Universe. What do they call it? The DC?
I think it's DCU.
Yeah, DCU? I think it's just DCU.
Yeah.
You know, news over these past few weeks. Obviously, Superman comes out in just a few weeks. Tickets are now on sale. And since the last time we recorded, I purchased my Amazon Prime early showing tickets. I don't know if you guys did.
I did not. I'll see it on regular release day.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going to see it early.
Because it was in DC. Those early events are weird, so
I don't like them when they're free. The free early events, those are the problematic ones that you got to show up early. But like this one is just basically like a normal showing. It's just Tuesday instead of, you know, Thursday or whatever.
Right.
So
yeah,
I'm excited.
I already had an invitation for a free showing, but it's not really a free one. It's a vendor presented one. Which means you got to listen to a sales pitch first, probably.
Oof, that's brutal.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah, I'd rather say.
We want to watch the show.
But, you know, they've already finished their shooting for Supergirl.
Yeah.
I saw that wrapped.
You know, I got to tell you, with each passing trailer and commercial for this Superman movie, I don't know. I get more and more hesitant.
I'm anxious. I am very anxious. That point that I'm anxious. Number one, I think they're showing us too much. I don't need that. I think
they're focusing too much on the humor, if I'm being honest. And I feel like the humor in the, you know, out of context, like the humor in the trailers, like the other day, right? There's a new Lex Luthor themed trailer. And, you know, it's Superman and Lex Luthor facing off. And Superman goes, "Your obsession with me is a little creepy, Luthor." And Luthor goes, "Don't worry, tall, dark, and Martian isn't my type." And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this. I don't know that this is what I want. But, I mean, clearly it's Superman. I'm going to see it as soon as possible. But I think it's a concern for me.
I have that same concern. And I first had it in the trailer where the robots are carrying his broken body and they're all comedic.
Did you hear that the robots are all like previous James Gunn actors? So one I think is Bradley Cooper, one is Pom Clementeef, and one is Michael Rooker. And then there's Alan Tudyk.
I guess say one of them is not his brother.
His brother is a different character in the DCU, I think.
Okay. All right.
So I also know that Rosenbaum recorded some lines, but no idea what he's voicing.
Oh, his brother's Max Lord, Andrew.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if he's in the movie, but his brother plays Max Lord.
Got it.
Yeah, so far the people that have seen, like, advanced the first 30 minutes have made comments about none of the serious plot points were revealed in the trailers, which surprises me because it feels like the whole plot was in the trailer.
Right. And but that's my anxiety is, like, have I seen the best parts of this movie?
I'm happy to hear the people that have seen 30 minutes of it say that's not the case.
That's encouraging.
It is.
So, well, we're all going to see it, you know, regardless. Yeah,
we're all opening weekend customers, right?
I am so all in on this movie that I have bought every toy I've found of it, as well as multiple t-shirts.
I have found one item of Superman movie apparel that I'm interested in, and that's the Daily Planet ball cap. I was like, okay, that's hot. I like that a lot. It's $40. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's a ball cap.
Everything's $40 nowadays.
I have an S-Shield shirt as well as a Crypto shirt. I have a giant stuffed sleeping Crypto that I bought.
That's what he calls his penis.
Isn't that what you call your penis?
A stuffed Superman. All of the action figures I could get a hold of. I have really gone all in on this.
I have not bought anything related to this movie, but I will, just real quick as an aside, my wife got me this week the 15th Dr. Build-A-Bear.
Ooh.
Okay. It is adorable, guys. I just walk around the house carrying around with me. But go on.
Now, was the bear already built when you got it, or did you go and have the
gave you the skin? Part? She's like, you got to fill this shit yourself.
No, we don't have a local Build-A-Bear, so we'd have to drive to St. Louis and hang out. And also, my understanding is that the Doctor Who ones are mail order only. I don't necessarily think they're one you can get in the store unless maybe for a special time, maybe. But she ordered hers, so it came all together. And for those who like Doctor Who, you know, Build-A-Bears usually have like a little heart sewn on them over, you know, on the left side of their chest. This one has two little hearts on the left side of his chest because Time Lords have two hearts.
That's great.
I have not broken down and bought the Superman Build-A-Bear yet, but
I was about to say, I feel like there's got to be one, because there was the Henry Cavill one.
Yeah. Oh, there is.
Now, for just a moment, would you guys like to feel really old and understand that this is the 25th anniversary of Batman Begins?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, we're recording this the day after the 50th anniversary of Jaws.
Yeah.
I obviously watched that last night to celebrate.
It's such a good movie. It is, especially once they get out in the water. It is so good, and they all start slowly going insane.
25th anniversary of Batman Begins. Damn.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll celebrate by watching that. But
I think I'm watching it tonight.
Yeah, it's a good plan. Yeah. Well, you know, since you brought up Batman, you know, they have announced that there is a, you know, so they've got the DCU, right? And then they've kind of branded these other properties Like the Robert Pattinson, Matt Reeves Batman movie that is at some point getting a sequel as DC Elseworlds, right? So they have these Elseworlds movies that don't tie into the main DCU. And one of them, I don't know if it's an Elseworlds or a main DCU movie, is Clayface. That they are doing a Clayface movie. They have signed a director, James Watkins, who recently directed that Speak No Evil movie with James McAvoy. He's known for suspense and horror. They cast a lead actor who I'm not familiar with, and it's written by Mike Flanagan, who I'm very excited about. Mike Flanagan has produced some of my favorite TV shows over the last few years, like Midnight Mass, The Haunting of Hill House, The Fall of the House of Usher, which if you haven't seen is spectacular and features Mark Hamill, so you should watch it. He also did Dr. Sleep, you know, the sequel to The Shining.
That I liked movie. Dr. Sleep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he recently released The Life of Chuck, which is supposed to be great.
People are saying really, really strong things about The Life of Chuck with Mr. Mark Hamill.
And for some reason, Clayface was a passion project for him. Really? And yeah, I read an interview with him the other day. They're like, how much was this influenced by Batman the Animated Series? And he's like, and he instantly jumps into, come on, man, Feet of Clay is the pinnacle of Clayface storytelling. He's like, he brought up the name of the two-party. He's like, obviously that had a heavy hand in what I wrote for this movie. And I'm like, okay, well, he's saying the right things. Hopefully the director takes that into account. Because I actually think Clayface, of all things, may be a DC movie I'm pretty excited about.
As long as he's shapeshifter Clayface.
Yeah.
You know, don't take him back to his roots, you know, where he's actor guy.
Chameleon. Yeah.
Yeah. I want him being, you know, full on, you know, clay bodied shape shifting Clayface. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful. I just struggle with the concept only because I can't think of a case where there's been a superhero villain movie that they made that was actually good.
Kraven the Hunter.
Morbius. I mean, are we even having this conversation, Wayne?
Sorry, I couldn't do it.
I mean, I do like Venom. I will give it.
Honestly, I will give Venom the credit of it is way better than it has any right to be. It's not good, but it's not painful. The first one, at least.
Yeah. Well, you know, but that wasn't even the most exciting movie news I read this week. Because last night it was announced officially that Jon Bernthal will be playing the Punisher in the upcoming Spider-Man Brand New Day.
That is movie. Awesome. I'm so pleased about that. I mean, it is so in tune with the original comic books, you know, with the Punisher being, and I want to say it was Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, Volume 1. I'm super excited about this. I think that is a smart, smart move on Marvel's part.
Do we think we'll see him shooting pedestrians? Jaywalkers?
I mean, absolutely. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, as long as, you know, here's the thing, you know, because I hope that also translates to, you know, maybe we'll see Mayor Fisk.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we'll see some of this stuff. I mean, I think
I saw an interview with, what's his name that plays Fisk?
Vincent D'Onofrio.
That there is a rights problem that he doesn't think he'll ever be in an actual Marvel movie because
I feel like that was a bold-faced lie, though.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying that's what D'Onofrio said. I'm just saying. You know, are you calling D'Onofrio a liar?
I'm calling anyone who does an interview for a Marvel movie before it's officially announced that they're in it is a liar.
Uh-huh.
We've seen Andrew Garfield lie.
Yeah, fair.
If he's concerned there's a rights issue that keeps him from being an official Marvel movie, maybe that's because Sony might have the rights to him, which could put him squarely in a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah. Like, what rights issue prevents Vincent D'Onofrio from being in the movie that would not prevent Punisher from being in the movie?
I don't know.
Or, I'm just saying. Or Spider-Man.
Or Spider-Man. Or Daredevil. Daredevil was literally in the last Spider-Man
movie. Just telling you what D'Onofrio said.
Andrew,
I think D'Onofrio is mistaken.
He is an actor. But some exciting stuff for sure.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see the Punisher in this next movie.
The only thing that I think would make me more excited would be to see aliens in the next Avengers movie.
No,
I would like that. Yeah,
sounds cheesy.
I gotta tell you,
the internet has answered our question about D'Onofrio. Kingpin's licensing issue. Sorry, going back to that and killing Aaron's transition.
It was a good one too.
Yeah, Kingpin's rights issue is related to Sony, so there's no reason he couldn't be in a Spider-Man movie. Marvel can use Kingpin, Daredevil, Echo, things like that, but cannot use them in their films because of the previous use in the studios and the licensing rights with Sony.
Shenanigans.
It seems like D'Onofrio could be used in a Spider-Man movie because Spider-Man also Sony. I would hope that the agreement that Marvel has with Sony to use Spider-Man would also include things like Kingpin as well.
You would think so. And rights issues are kind of, I mean, obviously there are situations where rights issues are weird, but it kind of seems like rights are all over the place lately. So I don't know. I think I would, unless the Kingpin story wraps up in Daredevil Born Again, I would not be surprised if he has some type of reference or something in the Spider-Man movie.
But at least maybe even like in one of those news segments, they're like, Mayor Fisk today speaks on and like
shows. Exactly.
Yeah.
But Aaron, you were trying to transition us to Alien versus Avengers.
Oh, was I? That seems so long ago.
Well, you know, it seems so long ago, just like issue 3 of the series. You know, this series has, you know, it's only 4 issues, but it feels like it's been about a year in coming out. The first 2 came out in pretty quick succession. The last 2 took some time in between, and I'm sure that's because of the Esad Ribic art. He tends to take a little bit longer. But, you know, the story concluded-ish in Aliens versus Avengers issue 4, or Avengers versus Aliens. I don't know. Who comes first in that title?
It's Aliens versus Avengers.
Aliens versus Avengers.
Yep.
So, Aaron, what did you think of the final issue of this series?
So, I have to say, the artwork by Esad Ribic is spectacular. I mean, if he's the reason that this thing has been slow to finish, I mean, the work is certainly on the page. The setting is amazing. You know, and Jonathan Hickman has really written a very rich, textured future for the Marvel Universe, in which Wakanda becomes a, you know, great big starfaring empire, crossing multiple solar systems, you know, becoming a galactic superpower, if you will. And I love the texture of this story. I love the setting, and Esad Ribic's artwork just draws these masterful, you know, backgrounds, and you know, they remind me very much of those, you know, painted background scenes that you would see in Star Trek. You know, like you'd see down in the corner, the team beams in, and there's this, you know, great big city on a hill, you know, with a great landscape, and, you know, multiple moon set sort of thing. But the artwork is just breathtaking and so imaginative, and I love the spaceships and the space stations and all of that. But what I hate about this book is that I don't feel really connected to any character in particular. And it's because it has that John Hickman thing where he's telling you a story from the 50,000-foot level, and he's not really getting you linked in to any character. This story was 4 issues long, and it probably needed to be 8 or 12. And
I was thinking the same thing. It feels like too much happened, like especially in this issue. Uh-huh. I felt like I was rushing towards an ending because, you know, they introduced this whole Wakanda thing, and it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, too much is happening, and that you waited till the fourth issue. Like, it feels like there should have been at least 6.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reveal of how the empire falls, and I won't spoil anything for anybody, is just kind of amazing, and how quickly it happens. And that makes sense to me. How quickly things fall apart, I think, is key. But, you know, he's telling the story of this battle that's been going on for years. And, you know, all of our heroes are old. I mean, I think there would have been some value in spending more time before the alien infestation and spending some time like, you know, what happened to, you know, there are any number of heroes, major heroes that we don't see or hear about in the book. What happened to those guys? You know, I think you could have done some one-offs in the story, like, you know, whatever happened to Peter Quill, whatever happened to this guy, whatever happened to that guy, you know, I think that there's opportunity for that. I think they set up a really nice sort of additional story for the future, but I was really kind of interested in the story they were telling that I feel like they just raced to the finish line for no good reason.
Yeah, you know, I think, and here's the thing, there are elements of this fourth issue that I thought were fantastic.
Same.
Like, yeah. The Mr. Sinister Queen alien.
Yeah. Yeah,
I love that. I love the character design. I loved everything about that. I loved the way they took out the character.
Yeah,
you know, with Venom basically, you know, exploding him from within. I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. But I felt like it fell flat because, to your point, there was so little heart. Everything was told from, to your point, the 50,000 foot level. It you know, there wasn't any real emotion behind that, which is different than, you know, like the badass moments in like the Infinity crossover,
right,
or whatever, or Secret Wars, or, you know, even what Jonathan Hickman's doing right now in Amazing Spider-Man. And this was cold Jonathan Hickman.
It was very, you didn't get to feel the humanity of our characters. Yeah. And, you know, Spider-Man, for instance, is a character who is all about personal stakes and really so deeply entrenched in loss, right? Mm-hmm. So we should have seen what happened to Spider-Man's loved ones, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're missing, particularly like in a first issue. Show me how our heroes are damaged and how they are now, or what they're protecting now, what's important to them now, other than just the survival of humanity. I mean, show us what makes life worth living, these characters, and what makes them continue to fight. Is it vengeance, which you can, you know, quickly assume that's the case for Wolverine, right?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of his character. But what about the other guys? And that's where I feel like we just didn't get to spend enough time with them to really mine that for the emotion. And I think had they done that, it wouldn't have been one of those, you know, just pulling taffy to deconstruct the story. I think that we would have gotten a lot more richer, more interesting moments. And by the time you got to this issue, you'd have been heartbroken. And that's what I wanted it to break my heart, Paul.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Yeah.
Instead, all I did at the end of the book was go, man, that was really a good book.
Yeah.
You know, I like the future. I like the playground. I like the way Asad Ribic drew the hell out of this book. Just didn't much care for the story or the way it was told.
I feel like I just read the third part of a trilogy, but not having read the first two.
Yeah.
That's how this book felt to me.
Just skip to the end. Yeah,
I skipped to the end, and that's all this book was the end of the story. I didn't get the beginning. I didn't get the middle. I only got the end of the story. You know, and it does set up for future stories. I don't know if we'll get some more. I mean, if they do, I would like to see the same creative team. You know, maybe flesh it out a bit more. But yeah, I mean, I think the book is beautiful. I think it's absolutely worth reading. It definitely feels like it's missing, you know, the human element and the beginning. So, but, you know, so it's a shame, but ultimately still worthwhile exercise. And, you know, I'm glad I checked it out.
It's usually licensed properties are not all that exciting. You know, they'll have some cool notes, you know, but that's about it. I really thought there was a tremendous amount of artistry involved in the telling of this story. I just disagree with how Hickman decided to, you know, do it from a very removed position in terms of telling the story.
Yeah, agreed. So,
but I think we can say that that's not the problem with Crypto, the Last Dog of Krypton.
I'm curious what other people thought of this book. Wayne, this is right up your alley. Why don't you tell us what you thought of this book?
I thought there wasn't enough here yet. There's really no, you get his kind of origin on Krypton and coming to Earth, but that's really it. I wanted to love the book, and I didn't really get, I didn't get pulled in yet. It feels like, this felt like a prologue before the actual title starts. The whole first issue felt like a prologue to me.
And I'm curious what Aaron thought. I hated this book. I hated this book so much. One, it's exactly why I was worried about this book. I don't like books. I don't like watch, even if it ends happy. And we know it'll end happy. I don't like, you know, to watch the dog go through the hardship to get to the happiness. Right? I don't want to watch Crypto get kicked and hit by a car. You know, I don't want to watch him get lost in a wormhole and be confused and sad. I don't want to watch that. I just want to see Crypto do happy things. You know, and I know that's not how books work, but that's not what I want to see in my doggy books. I also don't like that they introduced other dogs on Krypton and they refer to them as like
a retriever.
A retriever. I'm like,
Yeah.
Huh.
I did the same.
What are they retrieving on Krypton?
Yeah. Why
would you know, like that's I don't know that works for me.
I had that issue as well. They give it like their own retriever breed. Not like a breed that actually is from Earth, but
yeah, but that's like calling it, oh, this is a space dog.
Yeah. No, like
this is my space spaniel.
Yeah, this is continental retriever.
My cosmic corgi.
Now I want a cosmic corgi. God.
My deep space dachshund.
Yeah. I will say the art was good. You know, when you have a guy drawing a dog, when you have someone drawing a doggy book, and I shouldn't say guy because I didn't check if it's, you know, a male or female drawing this book. It's a male, Mike Norton. At least Mike Norton knows how to draw dogs. So at least, you know, the dog was cute, but, well, you know.
But it's a continental retriever is the other dog. Do they even have continents on Krypton? Because we haven't seen oceans on any version of Krypton.
Well, and then the end of the book, right, where Lex Luthor, is the one to find him. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I was like, this retcon's stupid. I'm out.
Young Lex.
Yeah. I did not like the book. Okay, so let me start with that. But I think my entire position on the book could have been corrected. I think they could have won me over if they had made one little change. And that is, instead of essentially experimenting on Crypto by launching him into space, that it had been planned as an unmanned mission, right? As an uncrewed mission that they were sending a test dummy that has all the sensors and whatnot. Because why the fuck wouldn't Krypton have that technology?
Design a shape that can go into space, but you couldn't put just like literally a camera.
Design a ship that can go into space, autopilot itself, travel through wormholes, travel faster than the speed of light. It can migrate from one galaxy to another. You can do all these things, but you still need to test it with a dog. Because Superman's mom says, well, if it wasn't Crypto, it'd be some other dog, right?
It'd be some other purebred continental retriever.
That's right.
Oh, no, he's not a
continental retriever. Yeah, he's not a continental retriever. She said he's a little bit of everything. But
yeah, he's...
Come on, Paul.
The other dog was a continental
retriever. Preference would have been that they had prepped it for an uncrewed launch, right? That they've got, you know, a test dummy in there. And that Crypto follows a ball or, sniffs around, falls asleep in there, and gets launched by accident. That right there...
Because the Kryptonians have criminally lax, procedures and policies around their spacecraft.
Absolutely. When you're developing your spacecraft, you know, in secret, you know, in your family laboratory, you know, because the Science Council won't approve your work. I mean, I think, you know, they're not thinking that anything's going to happen. But anyway, I would feel better about that than we're going to launch our dog into space, you know, because fuck. You know, the Soviets were doing that back in the 60s. I mean, come on. I would think the Kryptonians would be better about that.
The name of the first dog launched into space?
Laika?
Yeah, Laika. Yep. Laika. First Soviet space dog, 1957.
Yeah. 50s is what you said. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yep. First 57.
I knew the answer, but for some reason, I felt like he was setting us up for a joke.
No.
I'll let him go with it.
Yeah.
Just a little space race. to with Aaron and Polly here. And it was the only, there were a couple other dogs that died, but it was the only mission launched with a dog or an animal that there was no expectation.
No recovery. Return.
Yeah. There's no potential. Into space. Yes. Yeah. There was no way they were coming back alive. A couple more died.
I won't read that comic either, Andrew. I don't want to see the dogs go through hardship.
It was a 14-pound mutt that they'd found on the streets of Russia, and they found like five or six of them, and that was the Laika was the one that they thought would be the best. It's an interesting.
Laika was in a comic book that Aaron and I read.
It's a great book. What was that called? I don't remember what that was called, Wayne.
I don't either. It was. I remember being really good.
Oh, yeah. About the ones where the animals go into space and they come back super smart.
Yeah. I cannot remember the name of that book.
It was good, but I can't remember the name either.
Blanking on it. I remember you guys talking about it.
This, old man memory, you know.
Yeah, this is great podcasting.
That's okay. Paula cleaned it all up in editing, right?
Yeah. No, probably not. I've gotten lazy in my old years. They're hearing all of this right now. So crypto, I am out on any additional crypto. However,
I did like the cover.
The cover was beautiful by Jay Lee.
Yeah.
But as out as I am on crypto, I continue to be all in on Exquisite Corpses.
It is such a good book.
This is legit. Like, if this was this is a Netflix TV series that would be a major hit, basically. Yeah.
I would not surprise me to see that this doesn't become a streamer show at some point. It feels like it's written exactly for it.
I feel like it's going to be a graphic show. I don't know if that would affect what choice a streamer would take on, but I got to say, I still like the book. Book's good, but after that triple-sized first issue and everything that happens and all the world building, I got through issue two, which is a normal sized regular comic book. And I was like, is that all? Like, I need more pages. This is not enough. I need more. I was a little, I was left wanting more, which I guess is a good thing. And, you know, I found the killer face off in this one a little underwhelming, but you know, they're not all going to be home runs, I suppose.
Well, they clarified something that you had been asking about, Andrew.
Yes.
And that's which family doesn't have a killer in there. Because the family that doesn't have a killer in this issue has made side bets.
Yes.
A side offer.
So the reigning family cannot field its own killer, apparently. And I guess maybe because of the conflict of... That'd be too easy for them to influence, maybe, as the ruling family. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it was just a way to term limit them so they can't do consecutive...
I feel like that's what it is, to term limit them. So that they can't establish an ongoing empire.
But I do like how Pennsylvania is still working out grudges by offering side bets to their families to basically go after her main rival. I did like that, Wayne.
I love how one family is just like digging in the knife about how the one girl's sister is in there. Where do you see her blood?
I'm blanking on her that guy's name, but it's South Carolina's the sister. But hey, that's brutal, man.
The scene in the gas station is so brutal. Where the guy is getting hacked up and he's asking his friend for help, and his friend is just cowering behind the counter.
After he ran in to save his friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. It is just, oh, man.
I love that scene for the sheer fact of the guy doesn't just come over and try to save his friend.
Yeah.
Like, it is a realistic cowering in fear.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, and just at the sheer horror of it, right? I mean,
New Hampshire got exactly what they paid for in the congregation. I don't know if you remember from the first issue, but they were like, he didn't even want the reward. He didn't want anything. He just wanted to save more souls. So like, well, you got what you paid for, because he went down fast.
Yeah.
So there's one complaint I have about this book. It's only one. It's a good one, though. It's an old guy one, honestly.
Okay.
Is that... Like, I kind of wish that they had, so at the end of each book, you know, they've got like the tournament bracket.
Yeah.
I wish they had like little faces next to the names of the characters.
So you because could tie the names together.
Because like, you know, or so I could tie the names together. Because like, obviously I knew the little kid that they ran into on the street.
Gamer kid.
Yeah, you know, was probably one of them. And obviously I knew the ambulance guy or the nurse that they ran into in the street was probably one of them. But I couldn't quite remember. And I couldn't quite remember the characters' names. I mean, I think the kid Rascal Randy, like that one just seems obvious. But like, I would have to go back to issue one or, you know, I for me, it feels a little bit written for trade. And I would rather, because I'm reading it monthly, give me that like Marvel does. Here are the characters that are going to be featured in this book, and it shows like Spider-Man, Thor, like know who those fucking characters are because they're iconic, but I don't know who these characters are yet. So like a little intro page that says, here's the characters you'll see in this book and their names, you know, I think would be helpful for me as a reader. Mm-hmm. But other than that, this book is great.
Yeah. I mean, some of them, like you call out Rascal Randy, he only will be recognizable once he finds the costume.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, no, then I guess it wasn't Rascal Randy. No, it was the little
Boy Scout. He's the gamer kid, but and his drone is called Calvin. So it's gamer kid and Calvin.
I got it wrong. That's why I need the little guide.
And he is Connecticut's champion, if you will. And then, of course, Nurse Pete is literally Nurse Pete. He's Virginia's champion. Yeah. And I got to tell you, that's just shady. Like, that would never, like... Oh yeah, the cops just left and wanted me to give you a message. Like,
yeah,
you're saying that that's not how the medical profession works.
Weirdly, no. Like cops, like just don't like. Oh yeah, this is gonna be we got other stuff. We're just gonna leave this random nurse we found on the street with this corpse until the EMTs show up. No, that's not gonna happen in real life. Not in this country, anyway.
Well, what's the message?
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot.
I don't know. So I will say, you know, since we spoke about issue one, I did join James Tynion IV's Substack, which is basically just his newsletter, right?
His cult.
Uh-huh. And, you know, it sends out a newsletter because right now we talked about this. They're touring with, and I don't know if we talked about this on the mic, but James Tynion IV and the creative team is touring with each new issue, right? They're visiting their comic shop and doing, you know, a stop, and they're selling exclusive covers, but they're also selling t-shirts and beanies. I want all of this stuff. So hopefully, you know, I hope this series does well. I hope it gets optioned for a television show or something. And I hope that merchandise becomes available online. But if I didn't say this on the mics last time, I'm saying it on the mics this time. Check out James Tynion IV's Substack. I don't recall the name of it, but just you can look it up on Substack, because he really delves into more of the characters, the mythology, the making of this book leading up to it. You know, he is all in on this book, and so I really recommend checking it out if you enjoy this book.
Yeah, and a reminder that the book is eventually going to be a card game.
And it's going to be a card game next year.
Yeah, I enjoyed reading like the older articles about how they developed the series and how, you know, one of the creators came to them with the idea of making it a card game. And
yeah, I love that stuff.
I like the fact that they all got together like on a long weekend and worked out who was going to kill who and who was going to win. And you know, walking, according to his story, walking in, no one really knew who was going to win the tournament. And they all sat down and all worked through it over a long weekend. That's how they figured out who's going to win the whole thing.
I will be shocked if Gunman doesn't win.
I mean, I could see it being, I think it's going to be one of three. I think it's either going to be Gunman, Lady Carolina, or Fox Mask Killer. I think it's going to be one of those three.
Well, in the brackets, Lone Gunman and Lady Carolina face each other next.
I know. I think we mentioned that last time. That seems like an awfully strong pairing this early in the tournament.
Yeah.
But we'll find out. I think it's going to be one of those three.
I feel like Fox Killer's going to be strong. Once there's finally a focus.
Yes. Yeah. No. From the way they were talking about how great he was, and they were gloating about being able to recruit him for this year's tournament, I feel like Fox Maskiller is going to be a strong competitor.
Well, and if it's not obvious, dear listener, clearly we're invested.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I have a note thing. I've got stuff on my phone where I'm keeping notes about who dies when, which killer is sponsored by which family. I'm a bit involved in this.
I love it. I love that there's this mythology behind it. There's the story behind it, and it begs this kind of fandom, you know? And I think a card game will just cement that even further.
And after that, it becomes a dessert topping.
Ooh, can I have some exquisite corpse on top of my my ice cream?
Uh-huh. Well, and we got the card for Pretty Boy in this issue. Last issue was Lone McGunman. This issue, it's Pretty Boy. So I'll be curious to see who's next.
Nice.
Very good. Well, I can tell you which comic book is next we're talking about, and it's G.I. Joe number 8.
What do you think about it, Aaron?
You know what? I really don't have anything to say about it.
No, okay. You felt similar that you did to prior issues?
Exactly. It's like
nothing new to say.
Issue is exactly the same.
Well, I love this issue. Paul, you read it as well?
Yeah, so this, you know, we talked about how last issue was like a one-shot focused on Beachhead.
Yes.
This issue, I think, is the start of a two-parter. So I think we're just kind of getting like these stories in between the next major arc.
These vignettes.
Yeah, these vignettes. But this one, I think, is a two-parter focused on Baroness and Covergirl.
Well, yeah, it's two characters, so two parts, right? Two issues to cover.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah. I loved this book. I thought this was a great focus on, you know, the Baroness character in a way that we've not ever seen her portrayed before.
Yeah, and I still don't know if she's good or bad. Like, I'm still...
It's a thing. I don't either. And are those actually her parents? I don't know.
I feel like she's lying. Like, I don't...
I do, too.
Maybe it's her parents, but that's so random that, A, for starters, if she's surveilling her parents, like, she's across the street. Like, if they glance to the right, they're going to see her. Like, they're not going to recognize their daughter. Yeah. It just seems very fake, her explanation. But, yeah, I still don't know if she's good or bad, but I love the training sequence at the beginning. I love her and Covergirl basically teaming up for this girls' weekend. Mm-hmm. I can't say anything that I disliked about this issue. How about you?
Oh, same. And I like that. Is it Clutch? Clutch. Yeah. Has this secret transformer that he doesn't know how to tell Duke about. You know?
Duke is so obsessed. It's like, is the focus of Duke's obsession. And he's got one, and he's not telling Duke about it.
Yeah, he's like, this is my pet project. I've been working on this for a while.
I found it in the lower levels. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's great. I we've got some Dr. Mindbender in this issue. No, not Dr. Mindbender.
Raptor.
No, Major Blood. Sorry, Major Blood.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, because he's got some beef with Baroness. Well,
from the original G.I. Joe, you know, from his original card, his little profile card you cut out of the back of his action figure, it talked about how Major Blood was a huge lover of doing bad poetry. And here they've brought it back again as he's pinning a poem to the Baroness called An Eye for an Eye. It's great. I love how they refer back to a lot of the classic G.I. Joe lore.
Yeah. And, you know, it's told in a way that, you know, it's good for new audiences if you didn't know all that stuff, but obviously, you know, told with the love and care that if you didn't know that stuff, you get that extra appreciation. So, I mean, G.I. Joe is just a great book. I'm so behind, Wayne, on Transformers. I'm probably 6 issues behind on Transformers. I really need to get caught up because I feel like both books are building towards an eventual crossover. So I just gotta get caught up.
Yeah, well, I'm the other way around. I am behind. I'm only behind one issue on G.I. Joe now, but I am actually behind 2 issues. I haven't read the last one or this one yet, but I am completely caught up with Transformers.
I feel like this issue, and I don't know, maybe this is just me, but I know, Wayne, you like strong female lead characters. You know, you tend to gravitate toward books like that. And this book, yes. When I read this one, I'm like, Wayne's going to love this issue. And I actually think you would really like this issue 8.
Because my favorite so far of all of the G.I. Joe stuff has been Scarlet.
Yeah. Scarlet, so good. I'm looking forward. And they got to bring that back in at some point.
Yep.
Right. I mean, they're definitely, you know, holding us back from freaking Megatron and Snake Eyes.
They're just teasing it with the Snake Eyes. They know there's so many diehard fans out there like, when are we going to see Snake Eyes?
I know, and they teased us a year ago with Megatron. No, I don't know if he's popped up in the Transformers book because, again, I'm behind.
He's, He definitely has.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll get caught up.
Yeah, so I gotta get caught up too. I'm about 3-4 issues behind on Transformers. Yeah, I gotta get caught up as well.
Yeah, there's a lot to read, a lot to get caught up on, and next week there's even more.
Yeah, when we're basically buying everything that the company puts out except for Void Rival.
True.
And Paul's even buying that.
I haven't been buying, you know, but I go through cycles where I need to get caught up. Actually, yeah, I think I did buy the
You bought the trade.
Yeah, I need to read that. I gotta get caught up.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What is coming out next week?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So, I don't know. Again, thinking of Wayne, we've got a twofer of 90s properties coming back in comic book form in VR Troopers number 1. Ooh. And Biker Mice from Mars issue 1.
Ooh. Biker Mice from Mars, nice. Who's that through? Who's putting those out?
VR Troopers actually spins out of the most recent Power Rangers book, Power Rangers Prime. So it comes from Boom Studios. Biker Mice from Mars comes from the Nacelle verse. If you're not familiar with Nacelle, this is actually, they produce television shows. Yeah. So they produced like the Toys That Made Us and stuff like that.
And
so
the Center Seat, the Star Trek documentary.
Yeah, the Center Seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And they're up and creating comic book properties
like Biker Mice from Mars.
Yeah, okay, so
this is the first one.
I might check that out.
Yeah, and it's actually got a pretty decent, you know, creative team. It's writer Matt Hodson. Oh no, that's that's the backup. The main story is written by Melissa Flores from Power Rangers Prime, which I just referred to. VR Troopers spins out of. They both actually have pretty solid looking art. So we'll see.
It's great.
From Image Comics, we have Lazarus Fallen, which is the final series of Lazarus starting next week. I only read the first one. But
Is this the Greg Rucka?
Yeah,
the Greg Rucka Lazarus. Yeah. I think I read through about 15 issues and then I fell off.
Greg, I am current and have been waiting for the last chapter to fall. It is so good. I love this book.
I think I dropped off when I stopped doing digital comics is when I fell off reading it. I'm sure it's in trade, right?
Yeah, it is. Sure. It is. And it is so darn good. The quality holds up throughout. Michael Lark takes a break on the artwork, later in the run, but comes back. And I just love his art.
Well, from Marvel Comics, we get the third issue of Predator versus Spider-Man, which if you're sleeping on, highly recommend getting caught up. And from DC Comics, we have a couple of Absolute books. We have Absolute Wonder Woman, issue 9, and Absolute Martian Manhunter, issue 4. We also have the latest issue of Superman from Joshua Williamson as the author. But the big release from DC is actually the start of the new history of the DC Universe.
That looks so hot. The artwork looks fantastic on that thing.
Yeah, so I'm very, very excited about that one.
Same. Well, hey, we want to know what you think this week's books. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness.com. And if we use your comments on a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOMGeek, on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Well, guys, it was great chatting with you today. And maybe next time Andrew can be on time. I don't know. I'm just saying.
See you, Joe. I mean, hope springs eternal, Aaron. Hope springs
it does. Eternal. It does. It does.
Catch you then.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.